welcome to We the People. My name is Erin Ryan.
You okay over there?
No, I'm sitting in the Shirley Tall.
Do you need to send for help?
You should call somebody. I'm sitting in the Shirley Tall chair. I feel like I'm five and I'm getting my hair cut.
Yeah. Hey, my name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Right now, you can go in and check out the inventory, buy a John Deere mower or a tractor or implements. They got them all down there in stock. Go down and see them. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, right between Oasis and Pine Grove Avenue exits. Or you can give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
So, any luck in there, Travis? Oh, he's giving me the thumbs up. No, can you turn that off?
We were having some technical issue. But did we get that fixed?
Oh, I don't know. It just depends. It's been, you know, it's funny. I don't usually start getting things ready this early, but it's...
No, that jinxed it.
It did. It totally screwed me because I started at like 11 o'clock. I started an hour ago loading little apps and, you know, stuff anyway. So what we're looking to do today is speak with Dr. Stuart Reese. And... Travis is sending me text messages. Tell you what, if you're not a multitasker around here, you are doomed. Doomed, I tell you. So we're gonna do quite a few. There's an interesting ringing phone in the background. Does that mean something? Okay, I'll stop promising and deliver. We are going to do quite a few shows on marijuana. It is a huge issue. And for those of you who think, oh, brother, not marijuana again, I promise you we're not going to do all the same old stuff that you've heard a million times and, you know, you're sick of hearing about. This is these are things that are not being publicized, should be publicized, but are not. I'll give you a little sneak preview. We have a lady from Massachusetts coming in the future, a true believer of weed as medicine, who went on to have horrific experiences on high-potency THC. And also within the company she worked, she's now a whistleblower. And so interesting to talk to somebody who was all in and now is all out. Got another guy who was a former Denver Police Department guy who describes how high-potency THC is made, his experience watching how legislation changed in Colorado and how they dealt with all the different products and children of drug users and how they're endangered and traumatized when their parents are using and the different behavioral things that they watch and how it sets them up for addiction, which is just fantastic. And then another scientist who's a friend of Dr. Reese that we're going to have today. He's a chemical engineer who's examined the data around smoking THC and vaping THC, and that seems to be kind of a big deal. I'm not sure what people are missing about that, but not a...
I think they're missing a lot of work.
This is not a good idea. So, Travis, are we all set? And then...
I think so. If you could say something. His wavelength is here. He's on the phone.
Okay. Dr. Reese, can you actually say stuff and we can hear you?
Hi, good morning.
Good
afternoon.
Through the miracle of technology and a lot of struggle, Travis, you get an award.
Yay!
Everyone, give Travis an award. Yeah, because we switched it up on him. We said Skype, and then at the last minute, we're like, hey, we're going to do something different. Okay, so Dr. Reese, you hang fire for 2 seconds so we can let people know. You were on with us, and I'm going to have to look that up, actually. But he is a family physician working in Brisbane. That was part of our problem was we were actually connecting with someone in another country where I believe it's 6 o'clock in the morning on a different day. He runs a large clinic with a special interest in medical treatment of drug addiction. He's interested in both the underlying patho... You're in the dark reading my computer. Pathophysiology, that was a really long word, of drug addiction, how drugs work in the body and why they're so destructive to long-term health. And his most recent paper that he did, this was the one, I don't think I'll wreck it, but it's about how cannabis affects children. And the word we're looking for here is cancer. Kind of a massive increase, and I think for all the people who think, oh, well, it's not hurting anybody, it's an herb, it's safe and all that, I would hope you would go to our site, which is wethepeopleradio.us. There is a tab on the top right next to the archives called POT. Pretty easy to spot. And you can find a whole lot of shows on there that I think will change your mind. But I wanted to make sure we had Dr. Reese on. I published his paper here on our site, the paper that he just put forward. It's actually so big it had to be in three parts. Don't let that deter you. Dr. Reese, your findings were amazing, and I'm just kind of curious. Did you guys think it was going to turn out like this, or were you surprised?
Well, wait. Well,
kind of thought so.
Cannabis use has gone up. THC potency has gone up. The rate of people using daily has more than doubled, as you would be aware. Pediatric cancer overall has gone up 50%. And testicular cancer has actually doubled, more than 100%. So with all those rising trends, we knew that those things would be related. They're obviously, like, they're all rising trends, so they're going to relate. The question was, when you put all the other things in, like income and age and, ethnicity and tobacco use and alcohol, would the cannabis signal still come shining through like a bright beacon? And the other question we had was, there are techniques that you can actually look at these things over space and time, because we have state-based data for all this in the US. Over many years, we can actually do a space-time analysis. So the question was, in a formal space-time analysis, would the relationship hold up? And the other question we had was, could it be shown to be causal in a statistical sense? Because there are some powerful statistical techniques you can use to look at causation. And so we wanted to apply quantitative techniques of causation, see if the relationship came shining through. And when we did all those things, the relationship was strong and it was powerful and it was present. See, I mean, I just want to bounce off you something I just heard you say a moment ago, which is powerful. I think you said there was someone in Texas who was looking at how high potency THC is made and the damage to all the children. I was actually speaking to some of my patients the other day, and they were telling me that all the kids of the serious drug users, serious cannabis users, are seriously damaged mentally. And you see, that is a possibility that is open in the data, that this is affecting a majority, perhaps even a massive majority of the children who are seriously exposed, because that could explain the signals that we're seeing. And if that's the case, then cannabis is a major genotoxin, a major neurotoxin that's totally flying under the radar, and that could be driving all these epidemics that we're observing, be it autism, be it pediatric cancer, be it childhood leukemia, be it testicular cancer, be it so many of the cancers. If there's a major thing going on here, you know, there's a camel that's got its nose in the tent, there's an elephant in the room, then that could explain a lot, and we're just not seeing it.
And all your testing, just so we don't forget to let people know, you're not testing the cannabis you find on the street or stuff that's in these, you know, illegal cartel grows like we're looking at. You're growing this all in a lab in pristine conditions.
No, that's not what we're doing. We're taking the We're looking at the U.S. population data. So it's the U.S., the National Survey of Drug Use and Health, just survey about 70,000 people each year and ask in each state, and it's all done in a very careful way. So it's a nationally representative sample. They just ask how many people are using cannabis. So we get it's just the U.S. population census data, if that makes sense. That's the drug input data to our statistical studies.
Okay. All right. Because when we spoke last time, you were talking about actually testing substances. Did I misunderstand that?
We don't run tests in a lab that we have.
You're just doing data. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah, I did misunderstand.
We do data analysis. That's what we look at. And perhaps the scariest thing of all, I mean, the U.S. data is pretty shocking, as you saw in the paper that we just published, but the European data is actually a lot worse. And what that shows is that we're seeing the same signals in the US and in Europe. Now, that's important because they're the two major databases in the world, so you can effectively say the global data is singing off the same song sheet. So when you talk about rising pediatric cancer, you're talking about inheritable cancer, which is passing to the next generation due to genotoxicity in the older generation. So you're talking about, and we know that a lot of that's happening through the greatly damaged epigenome that cannabis causes, and that's inheritable for several generations. Now, the epigenome, everyone knows what DNA looks like, okay, the spiral helix. But DNA has actually got little switches on it that turns genes on and off, because most of the genes in most of the cells are off, if you think about it, because that's why a brain cell is a brain cell and a heart cell is a heart cell and a muscle cell is a muscle cell, because it's not a neuron. So all the other genes are turned off. So the DNA actually carries little switches on. And there's a super sophisticated switching system inside the nucleus of every cell, which turns genes on and off. It's got about 10 layers to it. It's very complicated. But the point is that cannabis greatly disrupts that, the switching system, and that epigenome damage is heritable for several generations.
And that's why last time you were on, you were talking about the chromosomal damage and all that. So I'm going to link that show to this one. It'll be on the same page for today. I guess I didn't tell people what today was. It's April the 3rd, 2022, just in case we replay this. But we will link that previous show on, because honestly, it really is something to consider when you realize it doesn't just affect, it doesn't just affect people right now. I mean, it goes into the future and affects children who haven't even been thought of yet. You had told us last time that if both the mother and the father were marijuana users, I forget, the statistic went up a lot. I'll just leave it at a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. See, since I spoke to you last time, there was a paper actually published from North Carolina, which is super, super important. I think the paper was about 10 or 12 pages long. But the supplementary data, there was a whole data set published along with it. It's 359 pages long, and that's available with the paper. It's a paper here. I'll just find the details for it. It's a paper by Schrott and Susan Murphy. From North Carolina. I've got the details here someplace. I'll find it. It actually lists 360 pages of all the epigenetic damage which is caused by cannabis. And the point is that the epigenome we've now figured out is really in charge of aging. So aging's part of this story now. It's front and center part of the story. And it's also key to cancer. A lot of cancers are based on a messed up epigenome. It's also key to birth defects, because it controls the gene expression, and the gene expression controls it controls body development when the baby's developing inside the mother. It controls organ development, controls arm development. So, you know, in the U.S., for example, we found a strong signal between cannabis and babies born without arms and legs. But when we went to Europe, they've got more detailed data, and they've actually got national data on the daily cannabis use. And that's the key, is the high-intensity use. So in the European data, the signal for cannabis and limblessness was even much stronger. And those papers are currently in the media. But the point is that it's all mediated through the epigenome. So when you look at the cancer link, you're talking about the cancer link. In that short paper that I mentioned, I'm just looking for the reference here. There's 810 references to cancer or neoplasia or tumor in the short epigenomic data, which also mediates the aging stuff. So this is a major theme in the authors of the paper. It was really strange, and we've written a couple of papers about this. It's a little bit controversial. You probably know the cannabis cancer literature is very, you know, there's to and fro, there's plus and minus papers on it. So they just sort of said, well, we won't worry about the cancer stuff for now. But then you come to the population studies that we've done in the US and now in Europe, and there's all these cancer signals, and all of a sudden all those cancer signals in the short epigenomic data suddenly make perfect sense, and the mechanisms underlying all this epidemiological associations that we're seeing, suddenly it's in your face, right? If you get 810 signals for cancer in a data set, you think, oh my God, there's something going on with cancer and this weed stuff here, right here, you see?
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, I was kind of curious what led you to look at the cancer profile. Let's take a really quick break. We'll come right back. We've solved all of our technical issues, except I have cords everywhere. And, so we'll just cross our fingers, but we've got Dr. Reese on the line, so everything will be fine. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Nice job, Bill.
Hey, thanks.
That'll be our theme today. Blame. I'm going to blame cannabis because it's bad. It's about time somebody did. So back to the cancer connection. I'm guessing, Dr. Reese, that you probably get a lot of pushback on that, especially from the industry and all that, or has that even started yet? Okay, so that's a yes.
Yes and no, you know.
Well, I mean, you can't argue with the... Well, I guess you can. You could argue with the results. But I'm positive this is not something they want out. Because, and, you know, to tie up with last time, too, you had said that this was CBD, hemp, THC, all of it. Is that still the case with all your cancer connections?
Yes, that's right, that's fine. Look, Erin Ryan has just sent me a message.
I did?
She wants me to ring her on a certain number.
Oh, I was insane. Forget that. Ignore whoever's impersonating me as me, because it wasn't me.
All right.
So, yeah. No, we just carry on the way we are. Must have just taken a really long time for it to get to you.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
California to Australia now is T-minus 20 minutes and counting.
It went on a humpback whale.
That's funny.
Erin, I mentioned that paper by Schrott earlier. That I can give you the reference. It's called Environmental Epigenetics 2021. Volume 7, number 1, and it's called Refraining from Use Diminishes Cannabis-Associated Epigenetic Changes in Human Sperm. It was a fabulous paper, and we've done a lot of data mining in that paper to connect the dots, like we said. Another paper I just want to mention is a very nice paper by Phillips. Let's see, it's in Drug and Alcohol Dependence, 2022, volume 234, page 109, 387. Looking at chronic health conditions, acute health events, and healthcare utilization among adults over the age of 50 in Hawaii use cannabis, a matched cohort study. They found a long list of chronic diseases, heart disease, chest disease, pain, heart attack, stroke, vomiting, injuries, and hospital usage, inpatient, outpatient, emergency department visits in people who use cannabis. And then a fabulous paper by Joseph Allen and colleagues in Drug and Alcohol Dependence, volume 233, 2022, page 109-363. It showed lifetime marijuana use and epigenetic age acceleration, a 17-year prospective exam, and they found a 30% acceleration of aging in cannabis users.
Wow.
At the cellular level using epigenetic age. And that's, you said you were going to ask me about why we looked at genotox. That's what we went looking for, because there's an extensive older literature on the genetic, the chromosomal toxic effects of cannabis. And so we understood, because we're doctors, that genotoxicity is going to be expressed in terms of cancer, birth defects, and aging. So we went looking for those to see if the epidemiological data, if the population health data showed up this signal. And we found in all three cases it comes screaming through. And now that's definitive evidence of the epigenetic clock, because there's a clock inside cells. Like I said, the epigenetics controls aging. It's 30% accelerated, which is scary. And if you think about it, we know there's severe genetic damage to the eggs, the oocyte from the female, and the sperm from the male, and they are all age-related damage changes. So we know that the eggs and the sperm are old, which means that the zygote after fertilization must also be old. Now, the epigenetic age of the sperm and the egg and the zygote, the fertilized zygote, have not been measured. But we already know the answer. So that means that if the egg and the sperm are old, that means the zygote is old at conception, from conception. It's actually old prior to conception. Right? So if you think about that for a while, I mean every country in the world's worried about the graying of the population, mm-hmm. and the old folks and all the rest of it. If they actually take their population and make them 30% older and add in all the rest of the stuff, the neurotox, the genotox, the birth defects, all the stuff, this thing hasn't got legs on at all, and no one has even started to think seriously about the impacts of aging on the population, as I just said from the Joseph Allen paper, let alone the congenital aspects of aging. I mean, who would have even imagined the fertilized egg is old before it's even fertilized? I mean, what does that mean for public health implications?
Well, I guess in my mind's eye, I'm seeing those wrinkly babies, you know. That a lot of times babies come out wrinkly and, you know, they get
Benjamin
less,
Button.
Yeah, they get, like, less wrinkly later. Well, not anymore. They just stay wrinkly.
That's a bit of an insight. There's a condition called progeria where people die from old age and they're 10 or 11 or 12 years old, okay? Oh. And they've actually showed in experimental animals who model this disease that you can fix that by fixing the epigenome. You know the stem cell factors, these induced pluripotent stem cell factors that Yamanaka got the Nobel Prize for a few years ago. If you express or temporally express the Yamanaka stem cell factors, you can rescue the progeria syndrome, right? You can actually make the mice who are modeling this disease have a normal life. Right. Well, cannabis is doing that experiment in reverse.
Right.
Right. So instead of rescuing progeria, it's inducing and exacerbating the progeroid pro-aging changes, even in the eggs and sperm. I mean, where does that take you in a population health sense?
It also creates health problems at a completely different age level. I mean, you look at things that we expect to happen. I mean, obviously, my brother, for instance, got dementia in his 40s, which is not super common. But imagine if we're aging, if we're putting a 30-year aging process on people before they even start their life.
It's just screw up
everything.
It's just what the? And this is going out completely without regulation. And the other thing what we found, we've now studied Delta 8 THC. And as you just saw, cannabidiol in great detail, the findings that we're finding epidemiologically seem to apply to all the different cannabinoids. And as you know very well, Delta THC is flying completely under the radar. And at the regulatory level, FDA and people like that, they're not interested. And yet the genotox literature for cannabis started in, I think it was 1969. So, like, it's not like, oh, it only just come out. We didn't know about it yet.
Oh, no. I saw Reefer Madness. It was...
was it the 60s?
Yeah.
When you were like 20? Oh, no, wait, you were...
No, I was not that old.
I cannot believe that this is something... I mean, the House of Representatives just...
the
vote was
passed.
220 to 203 here in the U.S. The House of Representatives passed the MORE Act. I'll have to look it up. I forget what MORE stands for. M is marijuana, though, so spoiler alert. But it was basically going to legalize it and let all the people out of jail who had, you know, committed crimes and been arrested for marijuana. And it was going to sweep in the Safe Banking Act and basically greenlight the whole deal. No pun intended. But... This is where our elected folks are going. This is where our criminal laws are going to allow more and more and more of this. At the very same time, you're discovering this kind of thing.
Yeah, that's right. But it's all based on ignorance, and it's all driven commercially. I mean, what you say is exactly correct. But in a sense, I mean, you know, we are very confident of our results. You know, I've spent thousands of hours analyzing this. And as I say, we've now got the European data, which actually says that the American news is good news because the European data is much worse news than the U.S. news.
Why is that? Is the European source for marijuana different? Why would it be worse data?
The results are worse for a couple of reasons. Firstly, they've got daily use. US only has daily use for the whole country, so you can't. It's difficult to say what it is at the state level. You can guess it, but you can't know it. And Europe has daily use by country, and daily use is the key thing because the genotoxic effects are all worse in the higher dose. Mm. So daily use is a key parameter. So you've got a handle on that in Europe you don't have in America. The second thing is that the U.S. have tracked 62 birth defects in the recent years since about 2003. Europe has tracked 95, so you've got more to look at. We looked at about 28 cancers in the U.S., and we looked at 40 in Europe. And the Europe track medulloblastoma, which is a brain cancer, which generally occurs in children. So the data in Europe is a bit better than the U.S. data in different ways. So we think it's just an analytical thing, okay, rather than it's just a data quality thing, rather than the results are different. But the point is that and also the U.S. and Europe don't actually, because there's 95 birth defects in Europe and 62 in America, some of the defects that Europe track, they don't have a parallel in the US data, right? So, of course, you're not going to get complete overlap. But where you do get overlap, you get overwhelming confirmation of the US results. So that makes us very confident of our signals. So, in a sense, as you say, the MORE Act and things like that, transforming, you know, the whole country into an experimental laboratory, which is completely unethical. This has not been passed by any ethics committee and never would be. It's just driven by a public disinformation process and really a corruption of the ballot box process.
Right.
But it doesn't matter because we're absolutely rock solid convinced of the findings. And it's like the Titanic, right? The Titanic is steaming full speed ahead into a zone of icebergs. So you know what's going to happen, right? It's going to come unstuck, and it's going to be a long way to the bottom. You don't know which iceberg it's going to hit, but you know it's going to hit an iceberg, right?
Sure.
Well, so I'm not sure that they'll be willing to admit that, 49% increase in childhood cancer is tied to cannabis. I mean, I could see them hiding and obfuscating that for a long time.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. You just got Tobacco 101 running again, okay? Because this is what the tobacco companies did, right? They held the case up in the courts for 20 years, and then they did the tobacco class settlement. And so, I'm on the other side of the planet from you guys, as you know, so I don't know exactly what's happening in the U.S., but I'm told that a lot of those farmers switched to cannabis or hemp, and now in states like in Kentucky and Mississippi and places like that, the atrial septal defect rate has gone up 20 or 30 times, which is holes in the heart, which has been tied in a number of studies to cannabis use. So, you know, I mean, in a sense, our stuff's prophetic. If the community continue to see when you make it legal, then you license not only everybody using it, but people using it all day, people staying stoned. So you're actually licensing high-dose intensity use. And if the three things have gone up, if more people are smoking cannabis, if more people are smoking cannabis daily, so the intensity's gone up and the THC and CBD potency has gone up, then you're actually launching. See, there's a speed bump in the road here. There's a threshold effect. So you're launching up. At the top end of all the genotox studies show that these are exponential effects, right? So when you cross, these people have leapfrogged the community from an illegal paradigm, from where the cannabis use is rare and not very often, to all of a sudden the community's in the high genotoxic dose. So obviously these things, and it's quite obvious. My friends in Colorado tell me the Colorado slums are common. They're not rare. There's so, the mental health aspects are common, and the baby stuff is common. And I've got doctor friends in Colorado. They tell me the presentations of cannabis toxicity, hyperemesis and craziness and aggression, and children who bite their parents and doctors and nurses and really badly, just incredibly bad behavior. These things are common in their emergency rooms every day. So all of a sudden, it's not you've got a bull in a china shop effect, and it's really obvious. And so you've really, it's the tobacco 101, and of course big tobacco has moved into big cannabis. So you're just doing the whole thing again.
But see, here we're finding that when they legalize it, all it really does is increase the black market. It doesn't do the things that it's supposed to do, which is get rid of the crime and all that. It exacerbates it because it increases the demand. And you do anything legally, you've got all these restrictions and regulations and permits and blah blah blah, cost a fortune. So what they do is they open up cannabis stores, and they do grow some legally, but they get tons of it from the black market because that's where they make all their money.
And that's not inspected or tested or any of that.
And most of the shops, we've heard from many guests that when they go inspect the stuff at these shops that's all supposed to be organic, they find, 85% of it or higher has all sorts of weird chemicals in it. So, not good. We have to take a really quick break, though. We're going to come right back with our guest, Dr. Reese. And you should probably, if you haven't already, gotten a seatbelt, because this is going to go really fast. This can be one of those shows where it's like, oh, my gosh, how did that happen? We're going to time travel with you. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
That's what our politicians are doing. They're taking the money and
I'm just thinking if you went down to El Paso and you tried to take the money and run, it'd be so crowded you wouldn't be able to get out of there.
Well, that's true.
All the people coming over the border. But, it's interesting. We grew up listening to all these songs, and it's kind of interesting to go back now as a senior citizen and listen to them again. And, let's see. Bobby Sue and What's-His-Face are sitting around smoking pot. They make bad decisions, and lots of bad things happen. It's like, wow. I guess I guess secretly we were being educated on this a long time ago. But the money is huge. And I would imagine that's the wall you run into with your information, Dr. Reese.
Yeah, but the you know, see, if we're right, we're creating our own tsunami of medical and social disorders that's going to break on us in time, and probably sooner rather than later. So you're right that there's money involved, but you know, you can imagine living with a child who's aggressive and biting all the time and is grossly neurologically abnormal. I mean, that's going to disrupt your life in a big way. And, you know, or the severe mental health problems, or, you know, the cannabis slums of Colorado. When these things become common, you know, when, you know, the pediatric heart surgery waiting list blow out, do you know what I mean? Where it's not, there's going to be nowhere you can hide from this as this stuff gets more common.
Now, with the, I think we talked about this once before, but if someone is a marijuana user, and you know, obviously they're damaging their cells, if they quit using, does any of that reverse itself, or are you've pretty much done the damage?
Yeah, well, we think that a lot of it improves. The question is, does it go away completely? You know, does it go back to 100% normal? The answer is probably not. The epigenome paper, the Schrock paper I mentioned a moment ago, they found that in cannabis addiction, there are 167 epigenetic signals that were messed up by cannabis, which in turn affected thousands of genes, okay? Then they waited 11 weeks. They had a certified period of 11 weeks of abstinence, certified abstinence. They proved that biochemically. And then they looked, and most of those signals went away, but then 127 new signals came up, which also affected thousands of genes in cannabis withdrawal. A lot of the cancer signals were more common in cannabis withdrawal than they were in cannabis. Some of the pediatric cancer signals. Now that's really interesting, because most people would expect that if cannabis is genotoxic, damages the genes, then cannabis addiction is going to mess up your genes. People would expect that. But what we found was that for two pediatric cancers, acute lymphatic leukemia or acute lymphoid leukemia, and for acute myeloid leukemia, the signals actually became stronger in cannabis withdrawal. Now that's very important, because acute lymphoid leukemia, ALL, is a pediatric cancer. And many of the cases of acute myeloid leukemia actually also occur in childhood. So that means that one of the reasons, and I've actually had patients like this, they get leukemia after birth because they go into cannabis withdrawal because they're no longer exposed to mum's cannabis, right? So you think about it, the process of birth sets off the leukemic process. It's called a leukemogenic process. Sets off the leukemogenic gene expression because they go into cannabis withdrawal. That's a mind-blowing concept. I mean, it's, you know, you just get born. One of the things I wanted to mention is one of the big factors which we in the last time I was chatting with you, we talked about cannabis as a weed whacker for chromosomes. I've since studied this process in great detail, because everywhere the data exists, there's severe damage on the birth defects with all the birth defects. So you're talking about trisomy 13, 18, and 21, which is Patau syndrome, Edwards syndrome, and Down syndrome. You're talking about deletion Q22, which is DeGeorge syndrome, and Klinefelter syndrome, which is male XXY, and Turner syndrome, which is female X0. These chromosomes, and everywhere the data exists, there's a strong link with cannabis. And what we found from the Schrott epigenomic data is everyone's seen cells divide. We've all seen the beautiful cells, and the chromosomes line up in the middle of the cell just prior to cell division. That's called the metaphase plate. And then suddenly they spring apart at anaphase, and the chromosomes are drawn to each end of the cell. And it turns out This has been called a mammoth cellular machine because it's so big that the nuclear envelope breaks down. It happens in the whole cytoplasm of the cell, okay? And all the steps that are involved, the chromosomes sticking on to the mitotic spindle, where they stick on, the way the poles of the mitotic spindle are drawn together so there's just two poles. Because if you think about it, if there's three or four poles for the spindle, then the cell won't divide into two, it'll divide into three or four. The way the poles are drawn together into two poles, and the way the chromosomes are pulled, they're pulled apart by kinesin motors to pull them to the poles, and even the spindle, the arms of the mitotic spindle itself, they're made of polymers, microtubulin polymers, and the microtubules are tubulin polymers, which are polymerized to a high order. All of those steps are messed up directly and epigenomically by cannabis. All of the steps. So the whole of the massive mammoth mitotic machine, or meiosis in the case of sperm and eggs, machine is disrupted by cannabis. And so it becomes obvious why the chromosomal disorders, which include the birth defects I just listed, but also many cancers, are all based on chromosomal translocations or chromosomal disjunctions or non-disjunctions. And we also showed, and I mentioned last time, that testicular cancer is known to be linked with cannabis. 42% of the genome is directly implicated in that. Acute lymphoid leukemia directly implicates 22% of the genome in the common translocations of ALL. And together with the genetic birth defects that I just mentioned, you're looking at 59% of the genome. The human genome is 3,000 megabases long. 59% of the human genome is directly disrupted by cannabis. So it becomes obvious, and the chromosomal translocation thing is a common theme in cancer. It becomes obvious why cannabis is linked with so many chromosomal birth defects and all the cancers if it majorly disrupts the whole normal process of chromosomal separation inside cells.
Yeah, actually it does. Even for those of us that aren't scientists, I mean, you can connect the dots on that. And is that making any, is this, how new is this information? I mean, because it's totally new to us, so I'm assuming this hasn't really gotten out there that much.
Yeah, well, the first paper, the first epidemiology paper in the whole literature, looking at humans I'm talking about now, was 2007, was from Hawaii. That was a paper by Forrester and Merck. So that was published, but that was thought to be an outlier. Until we started looking at this population stuff generally. The stuff in animals, though, that was published by Giver and Schramm in 1969. And all the defects that we're talking about, you know, the heart defects, the brain defects, the guts hanging out, the no arms, the no legs, the no brain, all of those defects were described in 1969 by Giver and Schramm. So we've known that it's in the animals, in the preclinical models, especially the rabbits and the hamsters. They're the best models of human disease since 1969. But the 2007 paper by Forrester and Merz was the one that paper had 22 birth defects linked to cannabis. All the sorts of stuff we've been talking about. Down syndrome was in there. But then we started, we've looked at, as I mentioned, we looked at Australia, we've looked at Canada, we've looked at the US, Colorado, and Europe now, and together with the Hawaiian paper, that's six jurisdictions where we're seeing very similar patterns in each case, and the amount of signal that you see really depends on the quality of the data. The better the data is, the more positive signals you get.
And this is all increasing due to use and increased potency.
Yeah, an increased daily use. It's the daily use is a big one. See, cannabis is fat soluble. It's lipid soluble. It's called lipophilic, is the medical word, right? It parks in the fat tissue. So the fat tissue is under the skin. It's in the brain because all the big axons in the brain are all myelinated. So that's wrapped in fat to insulate them, to make them conducted high very fast. And it's also in the gonads, in the eggs, in the ovary and the testis. So it accumulates. It's got a very long half-life in a habitual smoker. They can pick it up 3 to 6 months later. So it accumulates after stopping cannabis. So it accumulates in the fat tissues. So in the daily smokers, it's like you're always putting money in your bank account. You're never taking any out. Of course, your balance is going to go up. So the daily smokers are getting up to really high levels, and you can see why the genotoxic effects, which are more marked at high levels, become common, not rare.
How does it work with these test kits that you can buy, like at drugstores? I know if somebody knows they're going to get a drug test, they go down and they take one of these kits, and I don't know if it's a liquid or whatever it is, to fool the drug test. How does that work?
Sorry, I can't help you with that, sir.
Okay.
You have to try to pass your own drug test.
Okay, all right. Well, I just know that I know people that have done that, have gone down and, hey, I got to get a drug test, and they go down, they buy these kits, and then they go down and take a drug test, and they pass.
Really?
Yeah.
Probably more chemicals. You add some more chemicals to the chemicals to make it not look like the chemicals?
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm sure that's good for you, too. That'll turn you into Benjamin Button faster.
Yeah.
God. All of this stuff, all of this is just alarming and terrifying. We've got about, a couple of minutes here till the top of the hour, but maybe next hour we could start off with a little bit with your findings with the childhood cancer. I was interested in the age spread because it looked like the really high numbers were, you know, under the age of 5 and over the age of 14. And I thought, okay. I was kind of curious. The 49% increase, though, was overall, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Huh. All right. I don't think people have any idea. And, tell me this. In the studies that you did, is this only when the parents are using this prior to having the kids, or is this using it in the house when the kids are there, or is it all of that?
The cannabis exposure data we looked at is taken from the survey. So you're looking at community cannabis exposure levels. But people who have looked at, because the national survey that I mentioned does look at pregnant women and their use of cannabis, who's pregnant, who uses cannabis, all the rest of it. And they find that the rates of use in pregnancy generally just parallel the rates of use in the community. So if the community rates go up, obviously the rates used by pregnant women and their partners will also go up. So we've, the measure that we've used is community exposure, but we know that that's a proxy for the parental use of cannabis. So it's related, but it's not a direct measure.
Okay. Because I guess I'm always just in the back of my mind of thinking, you know, how many people are excusing themselves from the stats because they don't fit the profile. We're going to come right back and talk about this some more. Our guest is Dr. Stuart Reese. He's over there at the crack of dawn in Australia, and God bless you for getting up early. We will be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Magic and technology.